like, what the heck am I going to do? That was like 9 years in the making. And I basically came out of it with a negative $4,000. I like have a credit card that I inherited after all of that, 9 years of blood, sweat, and tears.
Welcome to the Success Lab podcast, where entrepreneurs collaborate to achieve greatness. And now your host, Beth Cochran.
The entrepreneurial path is inevitably paved with unexpected roadblocks and bumps, but it's also filled with opportunity should you choose to see it. That's exactly what Russ Perry, founder of Design Pickle, chose to do. In this episode, I talk with Russ about his entrepreneurial journey, which spans nearly 10 years, how he overcame some tough decisions, such as shuttering his 9-year-old branding and design agency, and how he sort of reinvented himself and created a new business model that is kicking butt.
It started quite literally 10 years ago. I had an unexpected surprise in college. I had a baby and was working for Apple at the time and found myself very frustrated that I had to like take time off and request time off to spend time with my new daughter. And so I had gotten a degree from Arizona State in design and kind of was dangerous with Adobe apps at the time. And so really at that point thought, well, you know, I could continue down this corporate path and do that gig, or I could maybe try to start my own business. And I briefly worked for an agency, which was a nightmare experience. It was like the craziest agency I've ever worked with. I worked there for maybe 3 months and I was like, I got to get out of here. But that was like a big motivation to me because I was like, if they're succeeding, I think I could. So started more of a design branding agency in 2005. And then in 2011, partnered with another team in Argentina and worked with two partners actually, where they did all the creative production in Buenos Aires. And unfortunately, last year in 2014, it was just like a really hard year for us. We lost like 3 major accounts. Sales pipelines were getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So when we didn't have something in the pipeline, it was just really challenging. And so me and my partner had an honest heart to heart and decided to close shop. And then I was like, what the heck am I going to do? That was like 9 years in the making. And I basically came out of it with a negative $4,000. I like have a credit card that I inherited after all of that, 9 years of blood, sweat, and tears. So fast forward to today. I mean, I took what my skill sets were from that experience, primarily like the systemization and how I would work with creative teams remotely and really efficiently, and also looked at when we were, you know, doing our best and when the clients were happiest. And it was like delivering business cards on time, a sales sheet on time. It wasn't these crazy branding projects. It was like that everyday, day-to-day kind of design. So put together a system and a model. Actually was influenced by a couple businesses, other businesses in this that use a similar subscription model. And here we are in March. We've been launched for about 2 months.
That's awesome. So you studied industrial design at ASU. So was it more, because I know that that kind of spans from product into more like software app development, right? Or did you study product?
Yeah. So my original passions were in engineering. And then I did that for a year, only to realize that was not my thing. I mean, it was so crazy intense. And I realized that what I liked the most about engineering was that creative problem solving aspect. And a friend of mine who was in the industrial design program was like, hey, Russ, you should go check this out. It's like all the fun without any of the math and science. And so I went to that school and, yeah, studied a lot with product design, a lot about like user experience and form factors. And industrial design, at least at ASU, was really about the physical world of things. I can imagine it's changed tremendously since I went, but part of that curriculum was a lot of like post work in Photoshop or Illustrator for whatever projects you're working on. And after college, I ended up using just that sliver of experience to launch my first business. And to this day, I've never officially done any paid industrial design work.
Yeah. Well, a lot of us do that.
Yeah, I think that's common for degrees. Yeah.
So how did you've done so much in the span of 10 years. How have you successfully launched and grown these companies and kind of, shifting from product design, industrial design into more marketing branding, how did you, I guess, pick that up so quickly?
Well, I think my training with Apple was huge. I was working for that company when they launched the first iPod, and it was like the biggest deal in the world. And so I got early on, I worked for them in college and then after college also, I got a really good understanding of like emotional consumer branding and marketing. And my first big gigs out of the gates on my own were not in a sexy, cool industry like consumer electronics, but actually in very boring, mundane B2B type businesses. So my first big client was a company, a division of LG, which everyone knows, the TV phone manufacturer, but they actually manufacture tons of home products. So I was marketing countertops. And I always joke that like the bar was so low that it was any little creative idea was better than what they had. But truly, we did emotional marketing, and that was not being done in that space. And so I just continued to build on that and really found a niche in that B2B world with technology. We did a lot with hardware, software, things like that. But it all just was around that same idea that, you know, we want to be emotional. We want to be connected to the brands that we're buying, whether it's enterprise software or a ice cream cone. And even now with Design Pickle, that's like, I want people to be emotionally connected to this silly little design service and really feel like they love it, like a brand, like a music brand or band or something. But I will say that it's a lot of trial and error too. I mean, last September I had no job. And I mean, you think of 10 years, that's could be success, but at that time I viewed it as a huge failure and was super stressed out and what am I going to do? Now in hindsight, I realize that, you know, my coach told me that was 10 years of practice for the next big thing, but it comes and goes, and it's always one of those things where you're always having to evaluate and measure and assess.
That's true. That's a good way to find the silver lining in everything. So that's
try to be an optimist as best as I can.
That's cool. So you recently gave a talk on, I think it was 10 things that you learned. Five things.
Yeah.
Okay.
I five too many things.
Can you share some of those?
Yeah. So that was a weird talk because we actually had to submit our topics like 4 months in advance, which put me right in the middle of everything that was going down with my agency being closed or closing. So I thought, well, you know, everyone loves to hear about people's failures. So when I put together the presentation, I know, but it's true.
It is.
And I think, you know, that there's the cliche, like, you know, you fail and learn and fail fast, fail often, learn from the mistakes. But so putting together, you know, what I did was I kind of looked at the key things that, like, if I were to do over again, I think we could have done better at the agency. I hope I can remember them all, but quickly they were have capital, meaning cash or profits or time, so you can fund and operate, hire talented people, have a vision, have fun, kind of really love what you're doing. And there's one more I can't quite grasp. I'll think of it a little bit later.
Well, the hire good people, when would you, I guess, because that's something that a lot of people struggle with is when to make that first hire. When would you recommend doing it, or when did you guys?
Yeah. So at the agency, it was kind of a domino effect, is that we were running on pretty slim profit margins. We were all creative production design. We didn't manage any media. We didn't do any PR. So those typically are like high profit revenue centers for an agency. That's why you see a lot of these agencies that do everything, is because they can make more money. And creative design often is like a loss leader. They're usually not making money on it. So we were trying to, that was our only deliverable. And so we were very slim in our margins. And what ended up happening was that we started to not be profitable with the design. And not having profits as a business is a big red flag, obviously. And not having profits consistently means you can't reinvest back into your business. You're running at zero net gain, you know, ideally of not losses, but just not profits. And because of that, we were never really able to invest in like senior level people to handle the company as we were growing, because we were growing from $5,000 accounts to $10,000 accounts to $50,000 accounts to $250,000 accounts. You can imagine the time and attention for a $5,000 company versus a $250,000 was a big difference. And the capital really kind of strangled us as far as our ability to hire good, talented people. So my takeaway from that was, look, you either need to be in a really profitable business, or you need to be funded, or you need to have some friends that are willing to go in it on equity that are skilled and talented, but you just can't build a business to that level of success unless you have A-plus players. So now in hindsight, I would, you know, I'm working on my first employee here in Arizona, and it's a guy I've known my whole life practically, and our worlds are just sort of coming together again after, you know, five, six, 7 years. And but he's an A-plus player. And, you know, he's someone that I'm like really excited to bring on, that I know can handle a lot of the variables and unknowns of a startup.
That's cool. So with Design Pickle, I was really intrigued by your business model and kind of tying that subscription-based kind of service to it. How do you guys, I mean, I don't want you to give away your secret sauce or anything, but how do you do that? Do you have people that you farm the work out to?
Yeah, so I have a team right now of 4 full-time designers, and they're around the world, primarily in the Philippines right now. And that's kind of one trick of the business model, is that we do have to source international economics to keep our price point low. But my last 3 years, I learned that, and I'll still swear to this day, that the team that I was working with in Buenos Aires was one of the most creative teams I've ever worked with, ever. And so to think that only US has creative talent is kind of, you know, short-sighted about it. So we basically have a virtual team. I've taken a lot of systems and processes from my agency and boiled those down and really refined those. We're software driven, so everything's via email. There's no in-person calls or meetings or anything. And we just try to be as efficient as possible. And we're focusing on that day-to-day production. So typically a client already has kind of a brand and they know what they need. It's just they need someone to do it.
How did you find the right people to work with? Did you test them initially?
Yeah, so funny you asked that. I totally lucked out. When I was between positions, between my agency and Design Pickle, I was consulting a little bit. And I told myself, like, I do not want to work with another designer, like, directly. Like, I am so done with working with designers. I was so burnt out from the agency and the chaos that ensued. So my first hire was actually a remote project manager. And I found my project manager is still currently with me, and he's amazing. But he ended up being the person to hire and review the designers. And I would do like an initial kind of scrub for quality and just kind of my sign off. But that decision to not manage any of that myself was like the best decision I've ever made, because it allowed me to focus on building the business and growing the business, whereas he could focus on finding designers and managing them and really running a tight ship. So I do feel like I got lucky, but I also think that we really clear thing we're doing. And so, you know, just trying to find people who get it and are on board and can understand the model and deliver a good product.
So how do you feel now with having more of a product-based business, sort of, versus service? Do you prefer that?
Yeah. It's awesome. I mean, technically, this is the genre of productized services. So while we are not even anywhere close, you need to think of companies like Uber or TaskRabbit or HomeJoy, these services that we've done all our lives, but now someone's taken some software and really streamlined the experience and made it awesome. So we're trying to do that with design. And so it's one of those things where it's pretty crazy just to see how that's evolving. And it's something that we're looking to definitely grow. From a business strategic standpoint, by going more towards a subscription model and having a less risk per client in terms of its overall impact on cash flow, that's been transformational. Because at my agency, we had maybe 6, 7, 8 big clients. And if any one of those clients were to pull out, it was a seismic shift in the cash and the revenues. And so with what we're doing now, it's kind of like there's enough people out there who could use our service and be really happy with it that when someone comes aboard and it's not quite a right fit, it's no sweat. In fact, I'm happy to, you know, not see them go, but I'm happy that we figured that out sooner than later, because I just want to find the people that are totally in love with what we're doing. And so, yeah, that new business model of that monthly subscription-based revenue is just like such a breath of fresh air. I mean, a sigh of relief in a lot of ways, because I can plan, I can project, I can see if we're growing or shrinking or where we're doing. Whereas at that service, you know, working with a select number of clients, it's always a roulette, you know, kind of roll.
Yeah. And trading hours for dollars is your limit.
That ended up being kind of our, you know, our initial strategy was that we could have done that in a way where we leveraged the economics of Argentina and the US, and we would have been hyper efficient. But we just never quite got there. And I think a lot of the reasons were we were just doing too much. We were just spread too thin, trying to do too many things. And so we weren't able to do anything really, really well, one thing. So now that's like we don't want to do your annual report. We don't want to do your crazy website redesign. We want to do a blog header. We want to do a business card. We want to do that. And we want to do those things really, really well.
That's so cool. So can you tell me a little bit about how, so someone signs up for Design Pickle. Can you tell me a little bit about how it works?
It's as simple, I'm trying to make it as simple as possible. So you go to Design Pickle, you put in your credit card information, you sign up, and immediately you get a custom email that you just send in your first request to. So there's a little bit of an educational like onboarding process that comes over the next few days from emails from us, just kind of highlighting, you know, different aspects of the service. But you're really your own art director, you're your own creative director. So we recommend, you know, use as much examples as possible. If you have previous work, you know, whatever it is you're trying to create, just communicate that clearly in the email. And then we turn it around next business day for you. And you get a zip file of everything, a downloadable zip file, and you could either take that and run with it, or if you need more changes or whatever, and it just goes, each round is a day turnaround. So, you know, sometimes it may take 2 or 3 days to get something done because we have a couple changes or edits or whatnot. Other times we get it right the first time and you're done the next day.
So cool.
Yeah.
So how are you growing it? How are you marketing it?
You know, we did a big launch as far as content marketing goes, and we're still benefiting from that. I'm seeing, you know, posts and retweets and things like that every day. So that was nice. And, you know, had some really great luck with the launch partners that I had, you know, mentioning us and getting some traction. So now what we're doing is we're taking our clients, we're almost to 60 clients now, and we're going to be looking at like the top 10 and trying to identify like our best clients and the industries and who they are, like kind of the persona around them, and then try to do more strategic marketing towards those people.
That's really cool.
I hope. It's just an idea, but
no, that's, it's, It felt like, because I was on the receiving end of one of your emails, and it just felt like you guys kind of hit the scene pretty big.
Well, good. Thank you. It's been a lot of work. I mean, just a lot of late nights, early mornings, writing, things like that.
Yeah. So last question. Knowing what you know now, what would you go back and tell your earlier entrepreneurial self?
How early?
You can take it to wherever you would. Maybe when you started Keen Creative?
I would say just trust in your instincts and trust in your gut a lot, you know, always. I doubted myself at times over the last 10 years and was influenced by consultants, influenced by employees, influenced by partners. And at the end of the day, you know, you do that gut check and you said, was this right? Were they right? You know, not to sound too smarty pants, but like my gut always kind of was the right thing. And I think you get a lot of times we get kind of hung up in doing the right thing so much that we seek so much external validation. Whereas if you just follow that little voice inside you, that's never going to lead you astray. So that would probably be it. You know, listen to that little voice, help grow that little voice, take time and, you know, create space in your life so that you can hear that little voice. Cause sometimes we get too busy. We don't even check in with ourselves. So that's just what I'm trying to do now too, is just taking it day by day, just going with the flow, not trying to overcomplicate and plan too far out. Just what is that little voice telling me every single day?
That advice is spot on. It's often not a practice you can develop overnight, but start practicing just listening and trusting your inner voice. It's more often than not there for a reason. And a quick note, I actually interviewed Russ several months ago and recently checked back in with him on Design Pickle, and happy to say that the company has grown at least sixfold since that interview. Russ is also taking what he learned from this whole experience, and he created a workshop that's here in Phoenix called Expand 2016. So it'll really prep folks for just kind of reinventing themselves and getting ready for 2016. So if you're in the Phoenix area, check it out. It'll be on December 2nd, and you can learn more about it at expand2016.com. So I will leave you with this quote of the week, and it's by Oprah Winfrey. Do what you have to do until you can do what you want to do. I love that one. For this week's Biz Hack and past episodes, head over to successlab.fm. And next week, I am in the lab with Jess Ostroff. She's the founder of Don't Panic Management. We talk about how to build culture in a virtual agency, particularly when your team is divided by state lines. And Jess is one of my all-time favorite people in the world, and I only have two of them. I'm kidding. But this is a really great episode, so be sure to tune in. And until then, have a prosperous week.
Magnolias make me feel invincible. Spring sweets, summer's pink. Magnolias, sweet, sweet, hey. Sweet, 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 hey. Magnolias, sweet, 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 sweet,